Hello there, and welcome to What You May Have Mythed. And this week, we are not delving into a myth or legend, but into history and exploring the life of a rather famous chap from Italy. The man who made crossing a river a momentous point in history, and who played the political game a little too well for his rival's liking. Julius Caesar. Now, before we get stuck into the life of Julius Caesar, let me remind you that if there is a tale or legend that you would like to hear, then please drop me a message on TikTok or Instagram and I'll get an episode out there for you. And if you could hit the download button, then that would be really helpful to me as well. Okay, on with today's episode. Julius Caesar was born into a prominent patrician family in Rome on July the 12th or 13th, 100 BCE. His family claimed descent from the goddess Venus through the Trojan prince Aeneas, whose, let's be honest, are rather large boots to fill. His father, Gaius Julius Caesar, served as praetor and governed the province of Asia, while his mother, Aurelia Cotta, came from another influential family. Caesar's formative years coincided with a period of political upheaval in Rome. The rivalry between the populares, who championed the interests of the common people, and the optimates, who favoured aristocratic rule, dominated Roman politics. And this environment would shape Caesar's later political ambitions and strategies. Young Julius, though, was still like any other Roman child, except he had to deal with the usual teenage dramas whilst also navigating the treacherous waters of Roman politics. Think of it like being at school, but instead of worrying about asking a girl to a dance, you're worried about being proscribed by Sulla. More on him in a moment. Despite his noble lineage, Caesar's family faced financial difficulties. However, his aunt Julia married Gaius Marius, a prominent military and political leader, which established a connection that would prove very beneficial to Caesar's career. But in 85 BCE, when Caesar was only 15 years old, his father died whilst bending down to tie his shoes, leaving him the head of the family. It wasn't the tying the shoes that killed him, but a heart attack. But Caesar navigated the turbulent political waters of the late Republic, aligning himself with very influential figures such as Lucius Cornelius Sulla, who seized power in Rome in 82 BCE. Caesar's marriage to Cornelia, the daughter of Cinna, a supporter of Marius, further solidified his ties to the Marian faction. However, his association with Marius would prove perilous during Sulla's dictatorship, and Caesar was targeted in Sulla's proscriptions. But despite the dangers regarding his marriage, Caesar refused to divorce Cornelia, which led to him being stripped of his entire inheritance. He also narrowly escaped execution by bribing his captors and went into hiding until Sulla's death in 78 BCE. Caesar's military career began in earnest when he served as a military tribune in Asia and Cilicia. His experiences there provided him with incredibly valuable insight into military strategy and administration. In 69 BCE, Caesar was elected quaestor, a treasurer of sort, and served in Spain, where he displayed courage and leadership during a mutiny by his soldiers. His successes here earned him the governorship of Hispania Ulterior, where he continued to demonstrate both his military and administrative skill. It was in Spain, in 67 BCE, that he burst into tears whilst reading the history of Alexander the Great. When asked what the matter was, Caesar replied, "Do you not think it is a matter for sorrow that while Alexander, at my age, was already king of so many people, I have yet achieved no brilliant success?" Well, that was all about to change. Caesar's military campaigns in Gaul, beginning in 58 BCE, were his most significant achievements. Over the course of 8 years, he conquered the region through a series of brilliant military campaigns, defeating the Gallic tribes led by Vercingetorix at the Battle of Alesia in 52 BCE. Caesar's conquest of Gaul brought immense wealth and resources to Rome, solidifying his reputation as a brilliant military commander and earning him the loyalty of his soldiers through generous spoils of war. Caesar's expeditions to Britain in 55 and 54 BCE, though less successful than his Gallic campaigns, further enhanced his prestige and expanded Rome's territorial reach. But Britain would not come under direct Roman rule for another 90 years under the rule of Emperor Claudius. Caesar's political ascent began with his election as quaestor in 69 BCE, followed by his election as aedile in 65 BCE. Caesar's rise to power in Rome was like a real-life Game of Thrones, minus the dragons and gratuitous nudity. Well, mostly. He formed alliances, made enemies, and backstabbed his way to the top, all while looking dashing in his toga. As aedile, he sponsored extravagant games and public spectacles to win favour with the Roman populace, furthering his political ambitions. In 63 BCE, Caesar was elected Pontifex Maximus, the high priest of the Roman state religion, which provided him with significant influence and prestige within Roman society. But Caesar's election to the consulship in 59 BCE marked a turning point in Roman politics. He formed the first triumvirate with Pompey and Crassus, two other influential figures, which allowed him to consolidate power and pursue his own political agenda. As consul, Caesar was cool. He pushed through reforms, including the distribution of land to veterans, the extension of citizenship to residents of Cisalpine Gaul, and the passage of legislation to alleviate debt and poverty. He also threw incredible parties and generally made life more fun for everyone. It was like being in charge of the world's biggest party house, but with less beer pong and more political manoeuvring. Despite facing opposition from the conservative faction in the Senate, Caesar's popularity with the Roman people and his military successes abroad allowed him to push through his legislative agenda and consolidate his power. The breakdown of the First Triumvirate and the escalating rivalry between Caesar and Pompey led to a political crisis in Rome. Pompey, feeling threatened by Caesar's growing power, allied himself with the conservative faction in the Senate and sought to undermine Caesar's authority. In 49 BCE, the Senate ordered Caesar to disband his army and return to Rome, effectively stripping him of his command and authority. But as you can imagine, Caesar wasn't going to do that. He was unwilling to relinquish his power, famously crossing the Rubicon with his legions, declaring Alea Iacta Est, the die is cast, and igniting the civil war. Crossing the Rubicon was Caesar's version of giving the finger to the Senate. It's like when your parents tell you not to do something, but you do it anyway. I wouldn't recommend trying this at home, though. This tactic only worked because he was Julius Caesar. Caesar's military campaigns against Pompey and his allies were marked by his strategic brilliance and decisive victories. The war was basically a really big game of capture the flag, only they weren't fighting over flags, but the entire Roman Empire. And instead of a friendly game, it ended with Pompey's defeat at the Battle of Pharsalus in 48 BCE. Despite Pompey's death in Egypt a month later in 48 BCE, Caesar continued to face opposition from remnants of the Pompeian faction, particularly in Africa and Spain. However, his superior military forces and tactical skill enabled him to emerge victorious, consolidating his control over the Roman Republic. In 47 BCE, after a quick and decisive victory at the Battle of Zela in what is now Turkey, Caesar wrote a letter to the Senate. And it was in here that he coined the phrase that serves as the title to this episode, Veni, Vidi, Vici, meaning I came, I saw, I conquered. However, in his book, Veni, Vidi, Vici, Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About the Romans But Were Afraid to Ask, which is excellent, by the way, Peter Jones explains that the use of the V sound in these words is because English speakers use their own spelling and pronunciation rules. In fact, the V in Latin was pronounced in a similar way to that in the Greek, W. So the title of this episode is not Veni, Vidi, Vici, but Uini, Uidi, Uiki, which doesn't sound anywhere nearly as catchy. Following his victory in the Civil War, Caesar returned to Rome as the undisputed master of the Republic. In 46 BCE, he was appointed dictator for 10 years, granting him unprecedented power and authority over the state. Despite his autocratic rule, Caesar pursued a program of reforms aimed at addressing the social, economic, and political problems facing Rome. He enacted land reforms to alleviate poverty and unemployment, implemented measures to alleviate debt and provide relief to the poor, and initiated ambitious public works projects to stimulate economic growth, all in an effort to to make Rome great again. Caesar's most enduring reform, though, was the introduction of the Julian calendar, which replaced the traditional lunar calendar with a more accurate solar calendar. This calendar, which established the 365-day year and leap year system, formed the basis for the modern Gregorian calendar used today. In early 44 BCE, Caesar declared himself dictator for life, which was the ultimate power move. It's like when you're playing Monopoly and you finally bankrupt all your friends, except instead of Park Place, you get control of the entire empire. Despite his efforts to improve the lives of Roman citizens, Caesar's growing power and authoritarianism aroused opposition from the conservative elements in the Senate, who viewed him as a threat to the traditional republican system of government. The assassination of Julius Caesar on the Ides of March, March the 15th, 44 BCE, was the culmination of a conspiracy by a group of senators led by Brutus and Cassius. The conspirators feared that Caesar's ambitions would lead to the downfall of the Republic and the establishment of a monarchy. On the day of his assassination, Caesar was scheduled to attend a session of the Senate at the Theatre of Pompey. As he entered the Senate chamber, he was surrounded by the conspirators who attacked him with daggers. The Ides of March were like Caesar's version of a surprise birthday party, but with fewer presents and more stabbing. Despite his efforts to defend himself, Caesar was overwhelmed by the sheer number of assailants and succumbed to his injuries, dying at the foot of Pompey's statue. His assassination sent shockwaves throughout Rome and plunged the Republic into chaos and uncertainty. The assassination of Caesar failed to restore the Republic, as it instead paved the way for further instability and conflict. Caesar's death ultimately led to the rise of his adopted heir, Octavian, later known as Augustus, as the first emperor of Rome, marking the end of the Roman Republic. Well, there you go. A few minutes of me waffling about the life of good old Mr. Caesar. There is, quite obviously, a lot less detail than one would find in a good book on the subject, so if you are indeed interested in exploring more about the life of Caesar, then I would recommend Adrian Goldsworthy's book Caesar, Life of a Colossus, and Rubicon by the ever-reliable Tom Holland. But now we must move on this day in history, and we are sticking with the Roman Empire to start with, as on the 28th of March 193 CE, Roman Emperor Pertinax was assassinated by his Praetorian guards, who then sold the throne in an auction to Didius Julianus. In 1556, Philip II was formally crowned King of Spain, and on this day in 1930, the Turkish cities of Constantinople and Angora changed their names to Istanbul and Ankara. And that's your lot for this week, but remember to hit the download button, and if there's a topic of interest that you would like to hear about, then drop me a message on TikTok or Instagram. And if you're enjoying the show, go and tell your friends and family about it, that would be amazing. But for now, farewell, and I shall be in your ear again next week for another episode of What You May Have Mythed.